You are listening to Sustain Now. In this podcast, you will learn from successful entrepreneurs and scientists about the newest climate change solutions to address the climate crisis. From food and agritech, over energy, material innovation, to circular economy. This nonprofit podcast is hosted by Frederica. She is a tech entrepreneur and climate enthusiast. You can find show notes and background information on www.sustainnow.ch. Enjoy the show.
In today's episode, I'm speaking with Sabine Staufer, co-founder and CMO of Hydraloop. The mission is to empower people and organizations to save water and energy whilst retaining comfort of living. Their product is a circular water system for family and multifamily homes. So you can use the shower water to flush your toilet or to water your garden and save up to 45% of fresh water. Sabine is a water conservation expert and a member of Policy Advisory Committee at Water Europe in Brussels, and awarded the European Union EU Top 50 Award for a female entrepreneur with sustainable innovation in 2020. This episode is packed with facts and aha moments about water scarcity and our water usage in general. You will learn about why Europe is already facing a water crisis, why water will get more expensive, and why we currently do not recycle drinking water efficiently. Sabine, thank you so much for joining my podcast, Sustain Now.
Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Today, we will talk a lot about water. In my last episode, we dived into industrial wastewater, and today we will talk about the usage of water at the family home. Can you please introduce yourself and explain your journey in a few sentences, which led you to found Hydraloop?
Yes, of course. So my name is Sabine Staufer. I'm a European citizen, but I live in the Netherlands, but I've lived in many countries in my life. I'm 56, and basically, maybe a little bit strange, I have a very extensive CV. I've done many, many different things in my life. And then at some point in time, I was actually studying for nutritionist, and I was doing a lot of fun things. When in 2015, it was actually my husband, who is the co-founder of our company, Hydraloop, said, you know, isn't it crazy that we're still flushing our toilets with pure tap water, you know, now in the 21st century? That it has to be different. It must be different. So actually, it was his initial idea. And that basically, we were living in the south of France at the time. We were actually already retired. We've been serial entrepreneurs, sold the businesses. As I said, we were doing a lot of other things. We weren't just doing nothing. But it gave us time to think, to reflect about what was really important in life. And this water wouldn't let go. So we moved back to the Netherlands, because if you'd want to do anything in water, you know, you have to be here. And this is the ecosystem where everything is to do with water. Moved back to the Netherlands and started from scratch with this idea. I always say I lost Arthur. My husband's name is Arthur. I lost him in the garage for a couple of years where he tinkered, because he doesn't come from the water technology background at all. He's technically good, of course, but it was just purely by trial and error and finding out. In November 2017, and of course this is a bumpy road, he, you know, it basically came up with this, what he really wanted to create, which was a consumer good, compact, very low on maintenance, that had to look, you know, like a designer good, had to look great. And that's what he created. So November 2017, we kind of left the garage and went on the road. And that's the beginning.
Fantastic, fantastic. I think we already talked in the pre-meeting about your entrepreneurial journey. I think that's always interesting to see people doing a lot of different things in their, you know, entrepreneurial journey. And you, I think you started as media. That was one of the bigger ones, the media entrepreneurs. So you already talked a little bit about, like, you know, how could it be that you flush down the water or fresh water at the toilet? But what have been your, like, your biggest motivators to start that? To think like, okay, now we need to reinvent or refit actually the existing water system in family homes to be, you know, more sustainable. What has been your biggest motivator to start, to restart it, especially if you already retired?
Well, you know, I think because we were serial entrepreneurs, both of us, it means that you are working hours are not 9 to 5. So we have always worked tremendously long hours and weekends and evenings. So as I said, you know, after that, we took a break. We were able to take a break, which is, of course, beautiful. And it gave us time. Of course, we needed to do a little bit of nothing. But then, you know, because intrinsically we are active people, you know, we started to study. Arthur started philosophy, actually. I started nutrition. So we started to do a lot of things that we had never had time to do. But it also is a time. You know, I'm 56. You know, you are starting when you're a lot younger, you know, you're busy with your family life and whatever. But when you're a little bit older, you know, it's time to reflect. And basically, I've always been conscious about life. I've been a vegetarian since I was 13. You know, I've even been vegan for a while. I drive electric. We have solar on the roof. You know, so I've been a conscious person for a long, long time. Basically, so it's been the time to reflect and to actually realize. And because Arthur thought he could solve a problem, and a really, really big problem. And we talk about it sometimes saying, what if you'd said, no, let's stay in the south of France and, you know, just not do it. But we did do it. And of course, sometimes we dream of that time when we had a lot more spare time, because again, you know, for the last 7-8 years, it's been, you know, 7 days a week, not 24 hours, but 18 hours at least, which is, of course, very tiring, but also very inspirational. So it was basically the fact that we thought we could do something. We could really, not like a little bit, but really make a big change in life. And that's what we wanted to do. And we felt almost like it's almost like an obligation to do. And, you know, one of the slogans that I like to use is that we didn't inherit the planet from our ancestors. You know, we borrowed it from our children. And that's how I see it. That's how I'm living my life. I'm not here to just take and use and enjoy. I'm allowed to do these things, but I have to get back and leave the planet better than I got it. Great. So that's the mission. So it's the mission. And that's what is the purpose, as a lot of people say. And that's what keeps you going and gets me out of bed every day.
You mentioned in your introduction that, you know, you moved back to the Netherlands because, you know, there is the water and there's a water issue. But probably a lot of listeners would say, like, do we have a water issue here in Europe? Or is it, you know, it's just Southern Hemisphere, Africa, we are aware of that there is a water issue. Do we actually have a water issue in the Netherlands or in Europe?
Oof. Today, again, newspaper, all water utilities in the Netherlands, all of them are saying we don't have enough. Already not in some places, in certain areas. So we can't, so businesses can't be get the water that they need to do their business. So it's hitting us economically. We can't build the homes that we need to build for all the people that, you know, for all the people that live here and are coming here in the coming years, because there isn't enough infrastructure to actually cope with it. This is on the water side. Obviously, it's also on the wastewater side. So this is daily news in the Netherlands. And then to imagine, just when we talk about the Netherlands, you know, just imagine that, you know, this is the, we've had 5 years in a row of drought. And Europe last year had its worst drought in 500 years. And already at this moment in time, and if you read the newspapers, of course, I'm very focused on it, but I think we're all starting to notice it now. You know, there is already at the moment a deficit of 40% worldwide. We are having a 40% deficit. So there is 40% less water available than we really need. Now, this used to be far away. We used to think that it was, as you say, like Africa or somewhere far away from our home. But it's not, and it's no longer anymore. So countries currently already facing a drought, currently, severely, are France. And President Macron came out with his water plan a couple of days ago. But it's Germany, it's Austria, it's Switzerland, it's Poland, it's Spain, it's Portugal, it's Greece, it's everywhere. And the reason is that it's very understandable why it is. Three reasons. Climate change, population growth. Well, you also have pollution, but another one, and the reason why we have such a drought, and the most important one is actually the following, because the first two I named, we already knew. It is bad decision-making in the past years. We haven't focused on water. We focused on carbon footprint. We focused on many, many things, but we haven't really, water's been totally neglected. And let's face it, you know, you open the tap, it comes out, you know, you flush your toilet, it goes away. And when you get the bill, honestly, it's so cheap. Nobody knows what, most people don't know what they're paying. They know what their electricity bill is nowadays, but they do not know what their water bill is. So we've set up this amazing system where water is treated, it's being brought to your building, you use it once, it goes away, it's all in the ground, and we pay totally nothing. Whilst, by the way, 3% of energy consumption is being used worldwide, 3% is by pumping the water around. Pumping the water around from the water utility to the home, and from the home to the wastewater facility.
Super interesting point, because actually the same thing has happened with electricity. We were just used to turn on the light and, we just have light because electricity is so cheap in Europe. And I think the last 2 years actually showed us electricity is going to be a rare good, or is going to be, not so easy to gain, and it's going to get more expensive. And I think we are right now as well on that edge of perceiving that water is going to be a water scarcity and it's going to get more expensive. I totally agree with that. I also read about Switzerland that because of last year, as you just mentioned, the drought has been severe also here in Switzerland. And then winter came with not a lot of snow, which also means that this summer is going to be a problem because we're going to have a lot of droughts because we're not going to fill up the water in the rivers, etc. So I think very good point. And I really like that 3%, pumping is only for electricity you need for pumping actually the water around, because many people I spoke to thinking that, water, that's not really related to CO2. And that's not really related to that part. So maybe that would be interesting as well to hear your point about how is water related to. And I think that's always, we live in a capital system, which is right now getting driven into measuring CO2, which I think is great. We need to get policies in place to measure CO2, to make it visible, to make people accountable, to make companies accountable for CO2. But, water is on a different level right now. So what would be interesting from your point of view to hear what needs to be changed from a more holistic perspective on policies, on awareness, etc., that we are getting, or even linking it to CO2. So people are getting more aware what we're talking about on a global perspective on CO2, etc. Can we measure it? Is it an impact already? Yeah, that would be great to hear from you.
Well, it's many questions in one, so maybe I forget one and you'll just remind me. With regard to the CO2, water has a very large CO2 footprint, but it really depends also where you are. To give you an idea, the World Economic Forum just recently came out with the fact that 10% of all oil consumption in Saudi Arabia is being used for desalinating the water. 10% of all oil consumption in Saudi Arabia. I'm repeating it because it's a lot. In the United Arab Emirates, again, where there is no fresh water, they're using 30% of all their energy to desalinate the water. So it shows that but of course, in the Netherlands, we don't use desalination. We take groundwater and surface water from rivers. But because there is less snow, as you say, our rivers are lower in, there is less water in the rivers. So they are more polluted. So it takes more effort to clean them. Because there is less rain in summer, our groundwater levels are depleting. And so they have to dig deeper to get the water. But there is, at some point in time, of course, there is a point where we cannot go any further. So there are a lot of costs involved in water that we as a citizen, we don't know it really. And we don't also pay for it really from our own pocket. And I think that in general, the whole value of water, the real and true value of water, needs to be seen, and we need to also pay for it. And it means that we have to change, for a long time with anything, we've looked at everything in a linear way, so we produce it, we use it, and we throw it away. And now the same with water, it shows we cannot sustain that system. It cannot sustain no longer because, and this was interesting from this morning in the newspaper in the Netherlands, again, there is an article and it's the water utility saying, we're going to make it. We are not going to make it. Something has got to change, which is interesting because until recently they said, no problem. They didn't want to scare us. There is enough water. And of course, water is a prime resource. So we're not talking about something that we can say, this summer we won't have water. So it's one of the biggest reasons why wars are being fought in the world. And we will have migration from people because there is no longer any water. So even if we are kind of feeling like here in the West, we think, we're okay. Well, I'll tell you, there's many people going to change you know, move from their countries to be somewhere else where there is water, because it is a prime resource we can't live without. So we need to go to a circular, more circular system, and this entails a lot. It's the way that we think, but it's most of it is the decision makers, Friederike. It's the people at the top that are making the decisions. It's the water utilities themselves. It's the politicians, you know, it's on local and regional, but also on national level that need to make changes. Now, what are the biggest obstacles at the moment to change from a linear water system to a circular water system? It's most of it is the standards and the laws that are old, and they are lagging behind. They're lagging behind all the innovations that have been done and that are safe and that can be deployed, can be used now, today. But it's those, it's the laws and the legislation and the standards, and it's the people that are in place there that a lot of the time are not really motivated to kind of change these laws and legislations. But so that really has to change, and that has to happen fast, and it's happening now. And we're working on that very hard also, for example, in an organization called Water Europe, where in Brussels, where we are really trying to, and I was also trying to change the system. And also I was reading that there is an organization that is now trying to create a EU blue deal. So we have a green deal, but we also will have a blue deal, so that water is at the highest priority of everybody. Because the thing is, because we've neglected it for such a long time, because the problems I was telling you already, climate change, population growth, we've known all that. It's all, it's only decision making. So we haven't done, made the right decisions, but now we have to act fast. And the beauty is, I mean, the good news is that the solutions are here. And everywhere in the world, there are solutions being deployed and used, making, for example, even tap water from black water, you know, so from your toilet water, treating it to such a standard that it can be drunk again. It's being done in Israel. So it can all be done, but we have to change the standards, or if there are no standards, accept each other's standards. If it's good in Europe, or if it's good in Australia, if it's safe in Australia and we don't seem to have a standard, let's accept each other's standards. Let's not, and this is one of the things, and I'm sorry for being so long about this, because I'm very passionate about it, and I spoke about it 2 weeks ago in New York as well. What is happening in the world? Everybody's reinventing the wheel over and over and over again, but we don't have time, because with water, it's quite urgent what's happening, and we don't need to. So let's look at all these laws and standards that are blocking. Let's update them, upgrade them, and as I say, borrow them from another country, and then maybe give them a tiny tweak so it's perfect for our country. But so we can really, you know, accelerate the implementation and the deployment of the innovations that are here and can be used and can really make a huge impact.
Just to summarize that, so, you know, coming back first to the CO2 part. So what you're saying, of course, it's measurable in that sense that you need actually a lot of electricity. And you mentioned that up to 30% of the energy in Emirates getting used for water production. And it's probably less in other countries, but still, you know, there's a significant energy usage for actually producing water. So there is a directly link to CO2. It's probably even more if you have to drill down, etc. So there could be already an existing measuring system, what you could use. And then It's the other part, which is the policy part. So the policies needs to change to make it more attractive to save water, to recycle water, to use circular systems. And Hopefully, you know, adapted as well from already countries like Australia. I think you mentioned Australia probably because they're already facing a lot of water scarcity and they really need to take care of the water, what they have on their continent, so that we adapt existing policies to the different continents as well. What is striking me in general, you know, we have this COP, which we are meeting every year and discussing all, you know, what of kind of obligations each country is doing. And what is really surprising, despite that UN has it actually as a sustainability goal, you know, water in part of their goal systems, that at COP it doesn't really get discussed in that detail yet. The question I'm really going to ask, like, the question is going to be, is it hopefully going to come in the next COP as part of the discussion to thinking about climate change, that water is a significant role player, as you said?
Yes. Well, you said some very good words. It is actually going to be a very important topic at COP28. And I had a meeting about this the other day. So thank God. Just 2 weeks ago, in 22nd, 24th of March, in New York. We were there as well. It was after 47 years that the United Nations held a water conference. So can you imagine 47 years ago? But they did decide actually that it had to be very high on the agenda and that it has to be a part of the COP. Now, one of the things that I notice and I understand also, but what happens at these COPs and these United Nations get-togethers, and it was the same in New York, the official thing, it's all these people flying from all over the world. They all fly in their private jets. They all come together and they talk about water and sustainability. And then they all fly home again, basically. From the start, this United Nations water gathering, there were no definitions. There was no outcome demanded. None. That doesn't give, you know, it's crazy because it should have been. There should have been some very, anyway, they've said, you know, they made a water action agenda, which has had like 700 and something pledges in there, but it's all voluntary. Okay, it's a start. But we know that we need more than that. But anyway, so you mentioned the word talking. And this is, again, the thing at COP28. I had a meeting yesterday or 2 days ago about it. And I said, listen, we can all get together again and we can go and talk about it. But you know what's one of the biggest issues? And I also heard from very young people when I was at the United Nations, because there were a lot of side events. So outside of the official body. And this is where it got interesting. And I spoke to very young people who did research amongst themselves, and they were from the European Union Climate Pact or whatever, activists. And they were saying that all these youngsters, you know, like in their teens and early 20s, they feel kind of paralyzed. They see this doom and gloom and this kind of, they're hearing about these tipping points and about our world and carbon and water, and they just literally do not know, what can I do? What can I do? And I can understand that. So what we did, of course, you know, you introduced me. I'm from Hydraloop, which is, yes, that's what I do. So we create solutions, several bigger, smaller ones and whatever. But, you know, it's about the mission, as I told you. So we also have created a global expert group on circular water. And we launched this 2 weeks ago at the United Nations Water Conference. It's actually a part of one of the water action agenda points. So we have submitted our organization, and it already has many international organizations backing it. And what we created was a blueprint with tangible solutions for the implementation of sustainable and circular water solutions. That's the subtitle.
Fantastic. Sounds amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and so why did we do this? Because what it is, it literally is a blueprint that governments, local governments, mayors, people can just look at, and we say, okay, because we made this in the Netherlands, we gave it to our Dutch government to help them make the decisions, because they, our politicians, are not experts in the water field. They have no idea about what types of water are there, what kind of solutions are there. And we realized that if we came there as Hydraloop, we are seen, or you are a vendor. You want to sell your products. And we said, no, we're on a higher mission. We just want to open the market for everybody. But this needs to be done. And this is our knowledge. So we created this group. Now we've created a global group and we've made this blueprint. And so everybody can look at it. Of course, it's not 100% perfect yet, you know, because we created it in a very short time. But we're inviting everybody to join this group. And so with that group, we have tangible solutions, and that basically you can implement, you know, solutions right now and do it.
What kind of solutions are they? Like, if you're thinking about the top three suggestions, what you're doing for governments, what would that be?
Okay, well, it basically gives them, so it tells them, okay, what laws and regulations you need to change and which are good standards to adopt. And by the way, we were talking about Australia. It's actually the other way around. Australia doesn't have a good standard. Mm-hmm. So we are helping them to adopt the standard in the USA, because that is a very good one. But we also have a standard in Europe, by the way, just for the record, because you said
good,
it
good
earlier
know.
On.
Yeah, that's very good. Thanks.
So we're helping Australia.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So in the blueprint, it tells you, so, okay, what types of water are there, and that we need fit for purpose water. So we don't need drinking water to flush our toilets, to clean our car, to water our garden.
So what kind of types of water existing there? Just to...
like hygienic water you could do, or circular water. So circular water could be like rainwater. So that is collecting rainwater and using that for example, toilet flushing. That is a circular water. Recycled water is also circular water. So that is from a decentral water recycler, like something like that, what we create. So you collect lightly contaminated grey water in the building. So that's from the bath, the shower, the washing machine, or condensation water from the heat pump, the wash dryer, and air conditioner. So that water can be treated and purified to this European or whatever standard. And then it can be reused for purposes such as toilet flushing, washing machine, garden, and swimming pool. But of course, there's like things like circular showers, whereby you immediately collect the water from the shower and it is given back actually to shower underneath. Now that we suggest should be hygienic water. That also has to have a certain quality of water. But if we make sure that these qualities are, met by the products, then these waters and then the solutions, the products that meet these standards can easily be deployed. And they are being deployed for many years in many countries. So it's giving the types of waters, it's the kind of standards that there are that are working and safe and that you can adopt if you don't have your own, for example. Then it gives certain solutions that can be deployed, circular showers and whatever. So those are kind of and that, by the way, very important one, that to incentivize organizations and people, how can you do that as a government? So, and then we take a look at what happened here in the Netherlands when we wanted to change the energy situation, whereby we wanted to incentivize people to have solar panels on their roofs. And when we in the Netherlands as a government and as a people decided that we wanted to do that, we did several things. We put it in the building code. So we mandated it. It wasn't voluntary anymore. So any new construction, we made sure that people got subsidies on the investment of the units. And we took away the VAT on the units as well. And this is a flywheel that works. So that is what we're actually advising that you can do to get the flywheel going. And at the same time, also making sure that the pricing of water will be also tackled. And a very good example is Belgium, which we are showing as well, whereby you have a basic water bank account as a person. You can use so much water for a reasonably low rate, so to speak. It's not very expensive. So it's not like if you don't have a lot of money, you can't have a shower anymore. But it makes you more aware, because the moment you are showering more, or you water your garden, or you fill a pool, okay, you can do that. But then you go into the much higher tariff, which is a more luxurious tariff, and it goes up like that. And it's shown that in Belgium and in Denmark and in many other places, this really works. So these are a few of the things that we are explaining, showing in other countries where it's done. And let's look at those, you know, use cases and good examples and use them ourselves.
Fantastic.
And a very important thing, by the way, as well, we don't have wastewater. So we have to look at wastewater in a completely different way, you know. And what we are saying is actually, I would like to say, as I have the stage now, that because this is our vision, I was telling you 3% of all the energy is used by just pumping the water around. So it comes to the building, used once, and leaves again. And what we're saying is we have to recycle and water as many times as we can. And every building, a house or an office block or a hotel has a water source. It has its own water source. This is that lightly contaminated water I was talking to you about earlier. And now it all is collected with the black water, with the toilet water and the kitchen water, and it just goes away. And we say collect it in the building. It's a source. Treat it there. And use it again for those purposes that do not need a tap water quality.
Fantastic summary. Thank you so much. I think we already now touched a lot of points, and I think what would be super interesting now to talk about, you know, what kind of product you're offering. So it would be great if you can, I saw that you have like 4 different ones, different sizes, etc. But maybe you can just explain what kind of products you offer. And as well, what's the step-by-step treatment process? How do you get that water, which is then, you know, not clean anymore, to these different types? I don't know if you're offering different types, you know, like hygienic water. This is, as you said, you know, which you can also use for gardening or for toilet. It would be great to just quickly explain what kind of different type of products you have, which are offering different types of water back, and how the treatment process is.
We offer one kind of water because we don't differentiate in that, because when we started out, we thought that our main market would be the southwestern states of the USA. So when we started to create this water recycling product that we wanted to create, which I said had to be, you know, compact and self-cleaning and low in maintenance, and it had to be designed. We also knew what quality we wanted that water to meet, because that was the NSF 350, which is the American standard, which is very high standard, actually. You know, it is almost like drinking water again. Anyway, so we knew that's what we wanted to meet. So all our products meet that standard. And basically it is...
So not drinking standard, but a very hygienic standard. You can shower with it.
Well, actually, you can shower with it. And you could even, if you drink it, it's purified to a certain standard, but it's definitely not to the standard of drinking water.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But the showering underneath it, there are no standards for that at the moment. So we would say, well, you can perfectly shower underneath it. We know it's safe, not just us. But, you know, if you look at the parameters that our water meets, that's super safe, you know. Mm-hmm. To give you an idea, the safety of our water in Europe, in America, as I say, is a very high standard. In Europe, we have a different standard, and it's a very good standard. You know what we decided in Europe with all countries? We said the water that is recycled, that you use to flush your toilet with, to do your laundry with, your garden, and to top up your swimming pool, that water quality has to be the same as the quality of the water when you swim in a lake in Europe. Now, doesn't that make sense? If you can swim in it, you're allowed to flush your toilet with it. Makes sense, doesn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, our water is even a higher quality. So if you can swim in it, you could shower underneath it. But this is, again, there is no standard. And officially, it's a gray area. Are we allowed or not? So a plumber will probably not install it because it's a gray area. But we're working on it to have a standard so that we can start doing it. All water has the same standard. It's that very high standard. The products that we have, we started with a standalone unit, which is like a fridge size. So it's 80 centimeters wide, 34 centimeters deep, 185 high. Looks very cool, very, you know, very design. And you would basically put that in like your washing room or your technical room or in the basement where it will collect the water and feed it back to the toilets, the washing machine, etc. But by demand, this is a 300-liter unit for like 4 or 5 person home. But by demand, because we went from all over the world, basically, and in the Middle East and in America, they use a lot more water per family. People just use a lot more water. So we built a bigger one. We built a 600-liter unit. So basically, it got double the size, meaning the depth is almost 70 centimeters. Then we looked at it and said, well, there are so many other rooms, like places like sports clubs, student housing. So we need also to be able to do larger volume. So we made a calculator, a Hydroloop calculator, and we have this modular scalable made-to-measure solution, which is called the Hydroloop Cascade. And this is a modular scalable made-to-measure solution. Cascade is actually a number of Hydroloop units that we connect together. And with that, we can do much larger projects. To give you an idea, a sports club uses a lot more water. There will be a lot more showering than just in a student flat or in a hotel or in an office. So, but this is a modular, scalable, made-to-measure solution. So that is what we are creating. These are more like projects that we are doing. And we're doing hotels and student housing and soccer clubs in many places already in the world. And then last January, we came out with the Hydroloop product that we hadn't created yet, but there is a huge market for. One, it's the Hydroloop Concealed, by the way, and concealed because it is connected with the toilet flushing system. Maybe if you know, if you have a hanging toilet, you have a button, you press the button. Now, behind that button, there is a framework in the wall. And instead of that framework, there will be a Hydroloop Concealed in there. So it doesn't take up any floor space. So it's super ideal for people that live in an apartment and are only 1 or 2 or 3 people. So the volume is enough to serve these people, yet it doesn't take up any floor space. So that is super, super good. And the good news is that we're selling it below 2,000 euros per unit. So we're making it very affordable. But it's also very easy for if you just want to change your bathroom and do a bathroom retrofit, because the other units, the standalone units, of course, you need to change your plumbing to make sure that that lightly contaminated gray water comes into that unit. Therefore, we always say by design, new construction is very, very easy to implement water recycling. And otherwise, if you buy an old house and you're going to completely gut it and change everything and you do all the plumbing again as well, then it's a good idea as well. But there are many people that are not doing the whole works, but they say, I want to save my water. So then we say, okay, When you change your bathroom, you can implement the Hydroloop Concealed straight away into your bathroom. Super easy plumbing. So that is another market that we're really approaching.
Now, so it's just to summarize that. So you're, you know, kind of your ideal customer. Let me know if I got that right. Yeah, let's go first to the ideal customer. So ideal customer right now is a family house owner who, you know, maybe depending on the size, like 4 to 6 people. You also have bigger units, which you said you have can cascade up. But it's in general, it's a homeowner who wants to refit their house. So they actually have to, if they take this, I really like the fridge unit kind of into their home, they need to re-change the plummeting. So the water goes through that and goes back then into the toilet, etc. So it's a kind of a project which you as a homeowner can do if you want to refit your current system, or if you want to build a new house and you already want to integrate that system. That's one part of the ideal customer, would understand. And but now you created this smaller unit which you can actually build, just replace a normal toilet, which you would, all of us know, like you have the water bucket in the back. So you would, if you would refit a home, again, if you're a homeowner, probably it's going to be difficult if you're just a renter, you refit it and then you can actually install a very small unit per toilet, I guess, into that flat as well. Is that correct? Did I understand it correct? These two customers?
Yeah, you can. But the idea is that the Hydroloop Concealed, you can do it in every toilet. Of course, you have to understand that you would need to bring the shower water into that unit, because it is the shower water that will be the water that will be treated, and then it will be cleaned to flush that toilet. And you can also add more toilets onto it. But if we really, you can use it in a bigger house and doing it for more toilets. But the whole idea is to have it in an apartment where there is usually one toilet and there is one shower. And then it is very easy to implement as a retrofit or by design. But I think to comment on what you just said, yes, so our who are our customers? It's not the people that are renting, because they don't own the building. And our slogan has always been, we, with our products, we empower people and organizations to act themselves and to seriously contribute towards one of the greatest challenges of mankind, drastically reducing the use of water. Because it's also that empowerment that, as I was mentioning before, with these young people as well, people like, there's many people that want to do this intrinsically. So from the beginning, the early adopters, these have really been the people that have, and they already have, you know, and we already have in over 38 countries, Hydroloop units are there. But what I really want, and what we're really working on now, is that it's not like just these individuals that are doing that, which is fantastic, but we really need to make a big change. And that means that all we are, our customers now and our partners are construction companies, building companies, hotels, because the hospitality branch is also very aware of the amount of water that they are wasting. And also from customers, you know, they are demanding much more from hotels, and they will even be choosing certain hotels that do more with sustainability and water conservation than hotels that are not doing that. So at this moment in time, we have 130 partners in over 50 countries as a company. So we started from that garage, as I told you, with an idea. And actually, currently, we have offices in the Middle East, in America. We have, of course, a head office in the Netherlands. We have a business unit in Canada and Sydney. And how we work is through a partner network. So we have all these different partners. And many of them are like, as I say, they are just house builders or ADU builders. These are like tiny houses. So that's standard in every house, in every building that they are building. This is going to be implemented, because, of course, that is the easiest way to do it. And the interesting idea also is, you're in Switzerland, correct, Friedrich? Yeah. One of our partners in Switzerland, there is a project near Lausanne. It contains 16 apartment blocks with 50 apartments in each block. This project had a Red Cross through it from the local government. It was not allowed to go. It couldn't be gone because the infrastructure was just insufficient for this new area to deliver the water and to also treat the wastewater. And they weren't prepared to change the infrastructure, because that probably would have cost billions. Then came our solutions into this building. So in every flat, there's going to be a Hydroloop cascade in the bottom, green light for the project. So if you look at it on a house to house level, it's nice. You know, you save up to 45% on your water. You reduce your wastewater with the same amount. You save energy even in your own house. you say you'd reduce your carbon footprint. That's not like something you can feel in your pocket, but you know that, that's a good feeling. But now, if we're going to do this for every new area that's going to be built, there are so, you know, we're going to have 2 billion more people on our planet within 28 years, 2 billion people. Now, and they all need water. In the Netherlands, we will have 4 million people by 2050. We have 18 now. So that's, it's a huge amount. We use, in general, in Europe, 130 liters per person per day inside the home. So it has to be that it's going to have to be done by design. It has to be implemented in the building code. And we are seeing this happening. So that, and that is our, that is actually our mission. And if the mission happens, it's, well, not if it happens, it's going to happen. It's only going to be a matter of time. But we've been saying within 10 years' time, no building will be built anywhere on Earth without its own decentral water recycling system. And it, it will become a normal appliance in every single home, every single building, just like air conditioning, just like any of those other kind of products. Why? Mm. Because it is super efficient. It reduces so much water and wastewater.
Yeah. So what I understood now is like one part is refitting, but if I understood you correctly, it's a lot now focus on the building constructions and especially the new buildings actually gonna be already having the Hydraloop system. So they're gonna save water. They're gonna, you know, what you just said, it's gonna be 45% less water usage, etc. So your target group right now is maybe not so much a refitting, but rather the new construction, the new buildings, etc. Is that?
It's always been that. It's always been that. Because if you do it by design, and we don't say it has to be a Hydraloop, it's nice if it's a Hydraloop, you know. But we, what we are propagating and what we are advising our Dutch government and everywhere in the world, build recycle-ready and future-proof. So make sure that the plumbing is done by design when you build any kind of building. So it is ready for rainwater collection, for water recycling, whatever, you know. Because if you do it by design, the cost is absolutely negligible per building, per home. But if you have to do it afterwards, yes, it's a lot of work. You know, if your house exists and you think, oh, I really want to go and start water recycling, yeah, you have to change some plumbing and pipes and stuff, maybe open some walls. So the best thing is to do it by design. And within the next 10, 20, 30 years, every house, every building will have another refurbishment going through. And then that's the excellent moment to do it then.
Okay, understood. So you already talked about how you want to distribute with this, I think, 150 partners, you said, I think, Sandra, around about
130
that.
130 now. Yeah, but it's growing.
Very good. 130 partners in the world. So what are your like 2-3 pillars of scale you want to focus on to really make that as a global product, what I understood?
We never started this to like say, okay, let's sell 100 units in the Netherlands and we're done. That's why it's a bit of a challenge, but that's why we're already working all over the globe. So I think there are a few things. Currently, we're still producing in the Netherlands, but through COVID, which accelerated everything, of course, transportation was extremely expensive, became extremely expensive. So we decided also we're shipping a lot of air. So one of the things that we want to do and what we created in the meantime is decentral assembly lines. And this means that there where our market is locally, we can actually ship a decentral assembly line and create the units there locally with local. So we create local jobs and we can create the units probably a lot cheaper because Netherlands is one of the most expensive countries when we're talking about labor. So we will make the subcomponents, the intelligent components will still be made in our factory in the Netherlands, but all the larger components will be made locally. You know, it's like the tanks and everything, and they basically were shipping a lot of air and everything is being put together locally and tested. And then it is sold locally so that our own carbon footprint is also, you know, reduced tremendously with shipping, etc. So that is our own product. And through our partners, are some of them are small, but some of them are very large companies. They are actually marketing, selling, installing and servicing our products. And this is how we are with the Hydraloop product. So this is one way of scaling the company. The second one is that we are talking to very, very large multinationals, whereby we're looking for private label, meaning that it's our product, but it has their logo and it has their coloring and it has their name on it. And then the third tranche, which will be a little bit later. So that second one is already happening and that takes a few years to really from start to finish. But We will be seeing that in the coming years. And the third one is that we will do licensing deals. And basically now you're looking, I think, at countries like, for example, in India, with a vast amount of people that, because we want it to be, you know, everybody to have water recycling, that it's possible and available and affordable for everybody. But then we may be working with just with the licensing deals. And that's how we're going to, how do you say that? Conquer the world sounds a bit too much. It's a huge market. It's such, we can never do that on our own. So please, we invite everybody else, create other products, join our market. There is enough, plenty for everybody. And together we can really change this world for the better.
It's a good point. Like, are there like not already competitors? You know, I've seen like showering recycling systems already on the market. How do you see, what is your USP to the competitors on the market? What really differentiates you?
There are a few other products on the market and have also been. One of the things that we didn't discuss yet is how do we do the treatment? But I'll come to that. If we have time, I'll still come to that. But one of the things we do, and we are the only ones in the world, and by the way, very proud, last year, we were awarded the Global Award from the United Nations World Intellectual Property Organization on our patent, which is the way how we treat our water. How we do it is that we do it without filters and without membranes and without chemicals. And we're the only ones that do it that way. And the reason why we chose that is because filters and membranes work perfect, but they block, they clog, and they need a lot of maintenance. And I think, I don't just think, I know that the other products haven't had a flight that already existed, because they need a lot of maintenance. So there were a few things. They're big, they're bulky, technical solutions. So somebody made a technical solution, but they never thought about making it a consumer good. And they needed a lot of maintenance. And so, and a lot of them were quite expensive. So big, bulky, not good looking, a lot of maintenance. You basically need a shed to actually, you know, have all these tanks in there. So we decided to create something cool and just sexy that you want to have in your house. You want to be proud to be a water saver. So we are the only ones that make it look so snazzy, I dare to say. Our price point is similar to the ones now, but of course we want to make it to other products, but we want to make it a lot lower. But the beauty is there are no consumables. You don't need to add anything. It just sits there. It's self-cleaning and it does its job. The best thing that some of our customers say, it's there and we don't even notice it's there and it does its job. So that is really what we did differently.
What is usually the maintenance time? Like, do you have to go there every 5 years? So how does that work? Is it telling you, oh, now you need to clean me? Or how does that work, the maintenance part?
System is self-cleaning, fully automatic. I mean, really, all our systems are IoT connected, are all, you know, all the information is sent to central servers. So all processes are monitored. All that information is fed back to your app. So on that app, you basically, as a customer, end customer, you get all this information. It also helps you. You don't have to, but you can kind of tweak your lifestyle so you can make even better use of your recycled water. You don't have to, because we've given you all the flexibility. You want to do a load of washing now, there is not enough recycled water. It is there within 2 hours, it tells you. If you want to do it, okay. But then you know it will take also some backup water, which will be then probably your tap water. Fully automatic. But it tells you if you wait 2 hours, you have enough. And there are many, many things how you can tweak it and make it more personal and get the best out of it. And we noticed that, and this is similar, again, you can take the linear to solar. People keep looking and seeing, you know, how much energy have I saved or have I collected or whatever. So the system is IoT connected, self-cleaning. But yes, there is technology in there. So we advise, depending on the area where you live, also with the hardness of the water, once a year, like a preventive maintenance, or once every 2 years. But so somebody comes around, does a little cleaning, cleans the UV lamp or whatever. And there are a few parts in there that, of course, you know, may need some maintenance. They have every pump, everything that is in there has a certain lifespan. So we are working at the moment on creating a package that people would actually be able to buy and to actually have like a warranty for like maybe even 10 years that everything that, you know, may need to be changed will be in that warranty package. But really, that's it. There are no filters that are clogging or blocking or whatever. No dirty work to be done. It's fit and forget.
Yeah. Right. So if I'm now a homeowner and I'm starting to refitting my house, let's say 5.5 rooms, and I say, okay, I really would like to install that by refitting my house and redoing all the plumbing. What is like my payback period I can expect if I'm saving so much water? Is there any like formula which you have?
No, there isn't really a formula. We're coming out with a lot of very interesting white papers because the thing is, it all depends where you live. Denmark. In Denmark, people pay €2 per 1,000 liters for water, but their wastewater is metered as well. And that is €8 per 1,000 liters. So it is €10 per 1,000 liters. We use on average per person 130 liters per person per day inside the house. So in the ROI in Denmark is 4-5 years. We have, in Germany, there are areas because it depends where you live, how much the water is. So it can be anything between, we know people that have 2 years and we have people that have 12 years. So it really depends where you live. But then I'm talking about the water pricing now. I think something that is very important is that A, water will become more expensive. Anything that is scarce will become more expensive. But another very important thing is that water will become more scarce. And it will mean that, for example, you will have less flexibility with when the water is there. So it's not going to be strange in Europe to think that between the hours of 10 and 12, the even numbers in the street will get water and the uneven will get it between 12 and 2. This is what we're heading to. So if you want to have more flexibility, create your own water. And also, what do you think about using water for your garden? I don't think it's going to be allowed much longer to use tap water for that. So if you create your own water, you can decide with your app if you want to use it inside your house to flush your toilet, or if you want to use that for your garden or for your vegetable garden. So it also gives you far more than just an ROI. And by the way, can I remind everybody, what is the ROI of your car? It's only why do we think about ROI in life? I mean, it really is that shouldn't be the main driver. And you know what? It also gives you a really good feeling when you are, and I'm not saying it from a commercial point of view, but you know, when you shower and you just don't waste it and know you are using it again, it really feels good. And if you have children, think about it.
I think that's a very nice last sentence, what you just did. Like an appeal on our, you know, conscience. And I really like that. And I'm the one of these persons who are having a vegetable garden and, you know, we grow our own vegetables and we have roses and really like, I really like my garden and focus on it again. And every time I'm thinking about, because in my rented home, I have no possibilities really to collect rainwater. So I have to use the tap water. And every time I'm thinking about how could that be that I have to use fresh water to actually water our plants. It's really crazy. So I really like, you know, your enthusiasm about that journey and what you've created in these few years. What has been your personal biggest learning in this journey?
Are you getting me all emotional now?
That's good.
No, it's just, you know, oh dear. It's not, of course, setting up a company, having all the challenges. When you bring something very innovative to the market, there is so much resistance. There is so much resistance and you have to persevere. You have to keep going unless you find out that, you know, you have to check, of course, in your journey to make sure that you're not pulling on a dead horse. You know, maybe your idea is not good or the timing is not good or whatever. You know, so of course we've done that as well. But we said, no, we have a good solution. And no, the timing is right. And we have to continue. But perseverance is the word. Maybe you ask me the biggest thing. You know, it's just why we're doing this. It's so important. And that gives me, fulfills me so much to do something so important for other people. It's that a word that sometimes I don't like, but it's the purpose. And having a purpose in life is so important. So many people miss it. And all the people that come and work for us also, I realize, and it's nice, it's not just people in their 20s, it's in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s. They are changing their careers and they say, I want to get up in the morning, I want to look myself in the eye and know that I'm doing something that really matters and that is really important. And that's, I'm privileged that that is what I'm doing. So yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question.
Fantastic. No, really nice. Really enjoy talking to you. How can people contact you if they would like to know more about the product, about the company? How can people contact you?
Call me. Well, call me is a bit. Send me an email. I'm sure you give my email details here. I answer all my own emails. You can find me on LinkedIn. very open and free to discuss anything. And as soon as, you know, I know a lot technically as well, but as soon as you want to know more, by the way, for anybody that is thinking about, hey, I would like to implement this in my own, you know, home or whatever, we have tremendous platforms built up with all kinds of information in all kinds of languages, how to prepare your building, what to do. And we also have many people that you can discuss this with. So we are fully prepared for all your questions, but happy to talk to you.
Fantastic. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining my podcast. I really enjoyed that conversation.
Thank you. Same here. And thank you for leveraging the visibility and helping us in our mission. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's episode. You can find the show notes, background materials, and contact details of our guests on our website, sustainnow.ch. Follow and share our podcast on any platform available. Do you have a comment or interesting solution to take a deep dive? Please don't hesitate to go to our website, sustainnow.ch, and write us an email.